Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us this afternoon is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. Matthew owns practices in Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, and Albany, New York, and he is here in the studio to answer your questions about orthopedics and sports medicine. If you have an injured, maybe an aching knee, a shoulder, an elbow, a back, good time to call is right now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address, and the number is 800-348-2551. Physical therapy, your calls are coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. Matthew is the owner of Goodemote Physical Therapy in Saratoga Springs, New York, and a PhysioFit in Clifton Park and Albany. His 20 years of experience includes exercise-based therapy and manual therapy. If you have an ache or a pain that you think physical therapy can remedy, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. The number again, 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote, welcome back.
Thanks, Ray.
What is the difference now between what you do at Goodemote Physical Therapy in Saratoga Springs, which I guess is your original location?
Correct.
And the two locations in Clifton Park and Albany called PhysioFit?
Well, Goodemote Physical Therapy is an insurance-based physical therapy practice.
Ah, it's all about money.
Yeah.
I understand.
PhysioFit is a name that my daughter came up with. My wife is from Denmark, and they're physiotherapists over there.
Uh-huh.
So PhysioFit, we use fitness centers, and we go into the centers and provide physical therapy services on site.
Is physio fitness more popular in Denmark than in the U.S.?
No, it's a trend that started in the U.S. a few years ago, and it's pretty popular everywhere except the Capital District.
Well, not so bitter. That's okay.
No.
All right, let's start with an email here, and then we'll get to the phones. The number is 800-348-2551. This one came in via email from Chris. And Chris writes, I've recently begun physical therapy for an oblique muscle pull. A week into it, the pain is several times worse than it was originally. I think it's because I had to pull the starting rope on a lawnmower multiple times. That seems, in hindsight, to be the worst possible movement for this injury. Should I just stop most activities for a while?
Oh, no, no.
What?
No.
That would be my advice. Sit down. Yeah. Relax.
Stop offensive movements, perhaps, but other movements not so much. And yes, the oblique is an abdominal muscle, and one of its job is to stabilize while you pull, and the other side moves while you stabilize on the right, you stabilize on the left, vice versa. So the activities he should be doing, was it he?
Doesn't matter. Christopher, yeah.
Yeah, so Christopher should be doing general activities that don't provoke that, and he should actually be engaging in the muscles as well. We do quite a bit of manual therapy, and when someone has a strain, there's usually a lot of tension around those muscles, and we try to work on those.
Yeah.
And then we provide exercises that would teach him how to engage his abdominal muscles without provoking it.
But what about the lawnmower?
Oh, that he should definitely hire out. So
no, really.
So that's a great question, Ray. You can stabilize it may be a little early if he just injured himself to do that type of activity,
yeah,
and having someone help him to start it. But what we do in the clinic is I would just teach him technique. So he would stabilize his torso and use predominantly his arm and try to pull that way. And it would be tricky because you do need those abdominal muscles to do it, but you try to avoid the movement of the muscle and try to stabilize in the area and then use your other muscles in the shoulder blade, for example.
You hear often of oblique injuries and strains for guys in the batting,
yeah,
you know, in the batter's box,
yep,
and they'll swing hard and then I strained my oblique.
Yeah, I'm guessing that it's more the deceleration movement because that's usually what it is. So their momentum is carrying them so far and then the muscles are trying to slow them down on the opposite end, and that's more than likely where they're injuring it.
How long does it take to fully heal something like that?
Great question. It depends, of course, because depends on the nature of the injury. If it's a, there's a different grading system you would do for sprains and strains. So if it's a grade one, it only takes a couple of weeks and you're off and going. But if you actually have a tearing of the fibers, it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks kind of time frame, and somewhere it's up to, depending, because sometimes it can take even up to 3 to 6 months, depending on how bad you did it.
So I guess, Christopher, the best advice is get a lawnmower with an electric start,
yes,
right?
That's a great idea.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote is here. We talk physical therapy on Vox Pop today. I'm Mark in Salem. Mark, go ahead.
Hi, Ray. No chickens, but why does he just get sheep and they can eat the grass?
Oh, there you go. That's a great idea. Well, thank you, Mark.
I have been diagnosed with both shoulders needing to be replaced.
Okay.
I have torn rotator cuffs that went unrepaired, and I did a lot of damage with my pounding and hammering and building over the years. But I play the cello too, and my left arm is I'm left-handed, is a fingering hand, and I can manage that.
Yep.
The right arm, bowing arm, when I'm holding my arm out, because of the damage done there, I'm going into physical therapy.
Good.
And I'm wondering what kind of motions should they be encouraging me to do and what not, because the action of bowing is different.
Yeah.
It's not impact.
It's going to be repetitive, though. So
yes.
Yeah. So the nature of the rotator cuff, one of its job is to lift the arm out to the side, similar to that position you would need with that bowing arm. And so depending on which rotator cuff muscle was injured and how badly it's torn. So there's different degrees of tearing, and a lot of us have tears that we don't even know about. And then there's other ones where there are ruptures, and ruptures means there's no contact from one side to the next. And
that's what I have.
Okay. So they typically do need repair. Based on what your activity levels will be. And the exercises the therapist will be showing you are exercises for the shoulder blade, because you need to have a good, solid, stable shoulder blade in order to use your rotator cuff in concert with the shoulder blade.
In concert.
Yeah, I know. Good time.
Excellent.
So, and then rotator cuff exercises. And the movements I typically advise people to avoid are pushing type of movements. So like pushing a heavy door, doing any type of push-up, press-up, something like that. And overhead activities. And think of putting like a luggage in a suitcase overhead bin.
Oh, I've lowered my standard, so to speak. I've brought the cello down so as low as possible.
Right.
And that does help. But they have specific exercises.
Yes.
And are there any I should avoid?
The avoiding ones would be the pushing type and the overhead type. So those are the ones that would be you'd be susceptible to more injury with. And you may not even be able to do them, but if you could do them, you should avoid those right now. And then the specific rotator cuff exercises, it's really going to depend on how bad your shoulder is right now. Sometimes it's starting with isometrics, which is not moving the arm through a range of motion, and sometimes it's resistive. But that's really going to depend on how much movement you have and how much strength you have in the other muscles.
But if Mark has ruptures, what amount of physical therapy is going to work if it's not connected to...
Well, he didn't most likely rupture all four rotator cuff muscles. Oh, so there's four different muscles.
Yeah.
I did treat one gentleman that had torn two of his muscles and was still able to use his arm.
No.
And I've even had some people have torn three that can use it somewhat.
Yeah.
So you can still use your arm, but there will be some substantial limitations with a rupture.
Mark, do you play the cello for the chickens?
No.
No?
My house burned 14 years ago, and I lost my cellos. I played the cello for 45 years before that, and now I'm going back to it, and 67-year-old fingers are not the same as 40-year-old fingers.
You got to practice. You got to hit the woodshed, but I think that the chickens would like it. And, Mark, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's physical therapy on Vox Pop today. Matthew Goodemote is with us. Your call's coming up.
Thank you.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number's 800-348-2551. And we talk physical therapy today with Matthew Goodemote. Mary is in Kingston. Mary, you're on.
Yes. I was wondering if there has a relationship has been established between weakness and fatigue in those upper neck, and I guess they're called trapped muscles, and migraine headaches. And if so, what kind of therapeutic help is out there?
So the upper trap muscles are not, that I know of, connected to migraines. However, there are muscles in the neck that can influence migraines, and there's sometimes that I think the migraine isn't really a migraine. It's actually just neck pain. So my main training is in the spine in what's called the McKenzie method, and my teachers taught me that there's these joints called the head joints, which are where your head joins to your neck, and then there's neck joints, which are the rest of them. And those head joints, there are cranial nerves that exit from your skull, and they'll go right around and supply the head face region. And it's very common for us to apply a pressure in the base of someone's skull where there's muscles attaching, and they'll feel pain right behind their eyes, similar to what you would experience if you were having a migraine. So what I typically tell people is the main thing you should be doing is seeing if the migraine you're having is coming from the neck. And of course, sometimes you're having a migraine and neck pain, and the migraine needs to be treated as a migraine and the neck needs to be treated as a neck. So what I typically do, because I'm trained in the McKenzie method, is I would go through movements of the cervical spine, and I would teach you how to do those same movements to alleviate that headache. And then, as I said, I do manual techniques that are pretty effective for those type of headaches. And there's a technique, it's kind of hard to describe, but I'll do my best. If you have a migraine on the right side, then what you would do is side bend your head to the left and then rotate your neck to the right. So if it's a right side, you side bend to the left and rotate to the right.
Okay, but bend head to the right and rotate neck to the left?
Yes, if it's on the left side. So
it's like The Exorcist, yeah. Linda Blair spinning her head around.
Yes, and then you repeat that movement. And so the McKenzie method is based on repeated movements. So you would get into the position, you would do the movement, and you'd come out of the position. So it's not a sustained stretch. And it's very common for people with migraines to have a knot or a tension in that upper trap muscle. It's probably not the upper trap, though. It's probably the levator scapula, but it's nearby the upper trap. And anyways, that muscle, I'll often apply a pressure to that and to the one at the base of the skull simultaneously, and it provides quite a bit of relief. And the last thing I'll tell you is a little tip. Instead of trying to stretch the trap, try to shorten it. So again, if you have a knot on the left side, then you would side bend your head to the left. And a lot of people try to stretch that muscle, and it's not as effective as shortening the muscle. That's a secret I do at my office, so don't tell anybody else.
Okay.
Okay, all right. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mary. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. Physical therapy on Vox Pop. Bridget in Otis. Bridget, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, my right leg, it's pretty funky lately. I had a ACL surgery back in, like, 1987 or 88.
Oh.
Which, you know, so that's a long time ago.
Yes.
But this past year at school, it's like, I'll be walking along, and it's like it starts to give. And lately, it's like kneeling or... I don't know. Sometimes it's inflamed, but sometimes I can feel it. Sometimes it feels like stitches are stretching. I don't know. It's a weird feel. Sometimes it's just a sharp pain. It's like right below the kneecap on the left side, just below where the ACL tear was. So I don't know if it's bursitis or what.
Well, it's not the ACL because that's actually in the joint itself, and there's no way you could palpate that from the outside.
Yeah, I would hope not.
And so the scar where you're feeling it is just that, a scar, and then they take little probes and go deeper in there, but it's a couple inches inward. So right by the kneecap, there is a tendon, and there are bursa there as well. And a lot of people will develop either a bursitis because of swelling in the bursa, and that will hurt specifically with the kneeling. And it can also be a tendonitis or an irritated tendon. There's some language changing that's happening in the physical therapy world, getting away from the word tendonitis and calling it tendinosis or tendinopathies.
Well, come on.
They're not finding inflammation on it. They're finding that the tendon has some tearing to it or has some fraying, and that's what's causing the problem.
Okay.
But ultimately, what the key to this is going to be strengthening. And a lot of times people will try to do the strengthening exercises that don't hurt, which makes sense. However, there's a lot of exercises that you have to do to strengthen those tendons that are actually in the position you're trying to avoid. My classic example is people have difficulty rising up and down from a chair, so they will avoid doing a lot of that. And it's actually that very motion that they need to work on. So to compensate for the pain, then you would boost, like put a blanket or something down in the chair to prop yourself up so you're not going too deep. And then as that gets easier, then you start to unfold the blanket to go deeper and deeper into it. But there's little to no doubt that you need to work on the tendon and specifically with strengthening exercises.
But why after 30 years?
Coincidence. I don't know that it has anything to do with the other.
I used to do a lot of running and biking and triathlons.
Good for you.
I don't know.
So we found in the last 5 years that running is actually protective to the knee. So running is very rarely the source of the problem. Cycling wouldn't be either, likely, and swimming is one of the best activities. Now, I say all that, and there are times where, of course, it is, and because the mechanics were potentially altered, especially back in the 80s with a surgery, that it is possible. But that would be internal, and that wouldn't be felt as much on the outside. And if you have a roughening of the kneecap that would be underneath the kneecap, you can have some cartilage that gets injured there as well, and that could potentially be painful. The truth is it is one of those times where it's hard for me to tell you directly because I'm not palpating. I'm not looking at where you're pointing at the knee. So
yes,
it's
thank
a bit
you for
tricky.
Not palpating. We appreciate it very much. Thank you, Bridget, for the call. Good luck. Our number is 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemot is our guest, and let's go to Joe, who apparently is driving. Hello, Joe.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually out of the car now, thankfully.
Okay.
Great.
So I have a chronic Achilles heel problem.
Yes.
I am 63. I'm very active. I bike, tennis, hike, you name it, and run. And several months ago, maybe even as much as 4 months ago, I strained my right Achilles playing tennis. And since that time, I have, I hobbled around on it for a while. I rested it, meaning I didn't run, but
yep.
I still walked and did everything I could without pain.
Good.
I've gotten back into an exercise, regime, but mostly on a elliptical because that's about the only thing that doesn't hurt it.
Okay.
But twice I've tried to go out when it's felt better and jog very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I re-injure it and I end up hobbling for the next several days. And then it's just back in the same cycle again. It gets gradually and slowly better, but it seems anytime I try to run again, I re-injure it. And so I'm looking for advice.
So a few things. I have to say, so I don't forget to say it. I was part of a running cohort that was a group of people around the country talking about running injuries and how to return back, for example, from an Achilles strain. And one of the most common mistakes people make is they try to jog, and jogging is essentially hopping from one foot to another. So what I mean by that is you should be running at your normal pace. And if you're not able to run at your normal pace, it means you're not ready to run. So you should stick with walking. But specifically for the Achilles, oftentimes when people get these strains, we think rest. And I understand that, but it's really more and more we're realizing that's not the best approach for it. And I want to be clear what I'm saying. I'm not saying you should go out and run. I'm not saying you should try to do an activity that is going to provoke it. But what I am saying is you should use the Achilles, and this is specifically for tendons. But not just move it, you need to load it. So the Achilles is a tendon that needs to have forces going on it. And one of the safest and most effective exercises you can do is a thing called an isometric. And basically you're just contracting the muscle. So you would have your foot hanging off the edge of a step, for example, and you would raise up a little bit and you're contracting the muscle while you're lifting the body weight up, and then just hold it there for a solid 20 to 30 seconds. And you would preet that in a few different ranges. And then it's also important to do both with the knee straight and with the knee bent, because the Achilles mm-hmm. is both the soleus muscle and the gastroc. And so in order to get both of those muscles, you have to do it in that order with the knee bent and knee straight. But the big thing people are afraid of is they're afraid of weight and loading it, because they're afraid that's what's going to hurt it.
Yeah.
But tendons don't yep. like speed. So they don't like fast movements. They don't mind slow movements.
Ah.
And so it's okay to do that. And the other thing tendons don't like is they don't like to be compressed. What that means in the Achilles is if you take your heel too far off a step, you're going to compress that tendon, and that's not a smart strategy. So in the beginning, you would start in the mid-range kind of thing, and you would gradually work down into your end ranges up and down and load that sucker.
Got it.
Okay.
And stretching, last thing, stretching is not a great idea for sustained stretching. Now, to do mobilizing it, moving it, that's good, but to hold a stretch that can actually make the tendon a little bit weaker. And this is some controversial stuff, but it's yeah. in the science. So,
right.
And then the last thing is foam roll your calf muscle.
I'm sorry, what?
Foam roll.
Foam roll your calf. Yep. I don't know what yep. that means. Yep. What does that mean?
So there's this roll that's a dense foam.
Oh, and, I see. Yeah, okay. I thought roll. That was an actual physical yep. thing.
Oh.
Okay, I got you. I understand. Hey, yes. Joe, good luck, and thank you for calling. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemot is our guest. It's physical therapy today on the program. And Mike is in Boston Spa. Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, my issue is that I have two ruptured lower back discs, L5-L4 and L5-S1. And once I ruptured the second one in 2011, I have not exercised a day since.
Oof. Okay.
I've been very active before that. I try to put super low miles. I drive for a living. What are some good exercises to do?
That's a loaded question, because there's a lot there. First of all, I want to say this. I just wrote an article in the Saratoga Today about the discs of the back, and they do regenerate. So they'll heal themselves over time. So the fact that it's been several years, there's a good likelihood that the disc has already been healing or healed. So that risk of you know, making more damage to it is low. We also know that the spine loves movement. And so one of the things when people tell me they rested afterwards, I really cringe inside, especially with the spine, because activity is what keeps it healthy and strong. That being said, it is what it is. So the first thing you would start to do is just general range of motion, making sure your low back can go through its full range of motion. I have a little slogan, it's mobility first and stability or strength second.
Hmm.
So you would start with the range of motion, and then from there start with low level exercises. And these range from things called dead bugs, which you can look online for, basic planks and side planks and bridges. Those are the safety exercises. Very, very unusual for someone to hurt themselves doing them. It doesn't mean they'll be easy for you, though. And as far as regular exercise, walking would be my number one, swimming would be number two, and then depending on your lifestyle, what kind of activities you want to get back into, I would be working you back towards those activities as soon as we possibly could.
Okay.
Great.
All right. All right.
Thanks for the call. Welcome, we appreciate it. Matthew Goodemot is our guest today on Vox Pop. Physical therapy, 800-348-2551. Gail in Oneonta. Hello, Gail.
Hi. I have an upcoming physical therapy appointment for lymphedema, and I was wondering what I should expect for that.
Wow, that's one of those questions outside of my wheelhouse a little bit. So lymphedema therapists are specialists at that. So it is generally going to be manual type of therapies and then some advice on how to move the lymphatic system. And there'll be some little tricks that they'll teach you on things you can do for yourself. There'll be things, some advice on potentially advice on things like compression and how to wear the compression and when to wear the compression. But that's really a specialty in physical therapy. And truthfully, if I get someone with a lot of lymphedema, I refer them to the therapists that work with it, because it is a specialty and you need to have somebody that knows what they're doing in that regard.
Thank you, Gail. Our number is 800-348-2551. Lois is in Del Mar. Hello, Lois.
Hi there. You said his name so fast, it took me forever to figure it out, and so I could Google him and see how...
Matthew Goodemot.
Yes, I got it.
Okay, good.
So you're not in the Del Mar area, unfortunately, and I can't drive to Saratoga Springs to see a physical therapist. But I've been seeing a chiropractor pretty regularly most of my life because I have back issues, but I'm not getting any relief, and now I have what's been diagnosed by the chiropractor as a sacroiliac joint, which is really extremely painful.
Okay.
Is there hope for it with physical therapy?
Yes. I do come down to Albany about once a month right now to see clients, but the SI joint, the sacroiliac joint, I'm always very skeptical of this.
Why?
Because as we get older, first of all, the sacroiliac joint only has a couple degrees of motion, and it usually requires a couple things for it to be the source of the problem. For example, someone who's in a car accident. Yes, that's enough force to move the joint. I believe that's possible. Women also, because they go through pregnancies and childbirth, that's also possible, especially during childbirth. The ligaments get loose to allow the baby to come out, and that can absolutely affect it. And then, of course, women, especially younger women. The reason why I'm hesitant to older people is because oftentimes that joint is actually fused. So there's a big percentage of people after the age of 50 where the sacroiliac joint doesn't even move anymore.
Wow.
And there's also some really kind of key tests that you can do. So it's one of those times where I'm skeptical, but I'm always skeptical of that when I get that diagnosis. And if something's not having an effect in a fairly short amount of time, for me personally, I start looking into what I'm missing, because if I got stuck on a diagnosis and I start to treat that diagnosis and I miss some other things around it, I have found that there's a whole bunch of soft tissue techniques that you can do to relax the muscles, which there in turn allows the joints to move better. And I typically tell people that within a couple weeks, you should be noticing an improvement, especially with the spine type of things. So that would be my
this belt that's about that is about 3 inches wide to wrap around.
Yeah,
it was supposed to keep it still when I'm gardening or running. I don't do either.
Yeah,
I go in the water and do water exercise.
Good.
I don't swim. I go in the water and move with usually an exercise flotation device on.
Yeah,
and I use a recumbent bike. I haven't had a child for 37 years.
Right. Yeah,
and this just suddenly kind of came upon me about a week and a half ago.
Yeah, so when it's that kind of early, a week and a half, I really would not jump on that joint. It would require some kind of event. You would remember the event. You would know for sure what you did, how you did it, when you did it. So when it just kind of pops up out of nowhere, I don't think that specific area. I would go after the joints above it, and I would have you do some specific movements for it.
It's only a week and a half, though. I mean, it may just heal itself,
correct,
right?
Correct. Yeah, so sometimes these things, they just pop up, and then they go away, then they pop up again. I still like to teach people what they can do the next time it pops up, because the odds are pretty high that it will. The percentages are pretty good that once you've had one episode, you're likely to have another. So even if it goes away, I still like to show people how they can figure it out on their own.
Well,
so.
Lois, thank you very much for the call. Now, maybe I'm wrong here, Matthew Goodemote, but you're not a big fan of the chiropractors?
No, this is the weird part about me, because the McKenzie method is more similar in the sense that the joint is the source of the problem.
Yeah.
A lot of times physical therapists think the muscle's the source, and I very rarely think that. We have some very different views on things for sure. But no, I know quite a few. In fact, a good classmate of mine from high school, we're coming up in our 30th year, is a chiropractor, and I refer people to him. And
okay,
I think
so there's no, see one on the street, you punch him out, anything like that?
No. No, it's like everything. There's really good chiropractors, and there's really good physical therapists, and finding those is the key.
All right, so. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's physical therapy today on the program, not chiropractic. Physical therapy, people, and we'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's physical therapy on the program today. Matthew Goodemote of Goodemote Physical Therapy in Saratoga and PhysioFit in Clifton Park and Albany joins us. A few emails here, and then we'll jump back on the phones. This one's from Mark. And Mark wants to make clear it's not the same Mark who called earlier. All right? Thank you, Mark. Mark writes, I have an injury to my hand such that I'm in pain whenever I open my hand wide in an anatomical position. The tissues between my thumb and the rest of my hand must have been torn. I've purchased a thumb stabilizer, which has given me some relief. But what sort of physical therapy can I do to promote proper healing of the injury?
If you don't remember a tear specifically, then I don't know what tissue would tear. That would be an unusual consideration for me to make. But I'm a big fan of mobility, so I start there making sure that the joints work properly. So the thumb joint is right near where he's describing. And I would start there, and in the clinic, I would do a thing called joint mobilizations, which is basically I do a little traction on it, move the joint around, and see if that helps it feel any better. And then I just go through a stretch, and the stretch that I'm doing under the table that no one can see is the prayer stretch. And it's basically just put your fingers together like you're going to say a prayer, and then you just keep, you slide your hands, or the butt of your hands down below your elbows so you feel a stretch in the underarm of the
Yeah, that's very
forearm.
Good for guitar playing warm-ups as well.
Yep.
All right, this is not that I'm a not even worth it for me, but still, I know that you can do that if you're good. Right. This one's from Deborah, and Deborah writes, no, it's not from Deborah. It's from Joan. Okay. Following up on what you said about rising from a chair, I was dismayed to discover while participating with my grandson in a playgroup that I had difficulty getting up from the floor circle on the floor. Is it possible to regain the ability to do this without using hands, knees, etc.? If so, how?
It's not, well, let me think for a second. Without the knees, that would be very hard. If you can levitate,
No, no, I believe she means getting on hands and knees. Okay, you know what?
Okay,
in zero gravity. Yes.
So it would be possible, yes. And the a couple things. Number one is I would start somebody off with a chair squat, and then I'd work on lunges, which is basically just getting the knee down to the floor. And then from there, what you can do is you can go onto both knees and then just practice bringing your foot out in front of you. And just kind of you go backwards in time and you redo all the same movements to get the same. You do all the same movements to get one exercise down.
Okay.
So reverse the order and go from there.
Now, I'm not saying this is not connected to Joan in any way. I'm not casting aspersions. I'm not saying Joan is old. But isn't there a point where you have to say, look, I'm pretty old. I'm not going to be able to do everything I could do when I was 30.
Right. You're definitely not to
not,
do everything
you,
in your 30s.
Joan.
Right. I like to go where people want to go. So if somebody wants to achieve the ability, and quite frankly, in physical therapy, we're often trying to get people to get back off the ground in case they fall.
Yeah.
And so in that regard, I would want to have somebody learn how to do it properly and to be able to do it. Whether they did it as an exercise or did it routinely, that wouldn't be where my focus would be. It's just to make sure they were safe. So if they did happen to fall, they could get themselves back up.
All right. This one's from Steven. Steven says, what's the best treatment for plantar fasciitis, cold stretching or heat?
Oh, so cold stretching. I'm not a huge advocate of ice. Ice numbs things. And so what I would be working more on is a few things with plantar fasciitis. And one is the strength of the muscles of the feet themselves. And the way you do that is by getting out of orthotics, going around barefooted, at home, not on the streets necessarily.
No.
And if you can't tolerate it for long durations, even just a couple minutes at a time, doing strengthening exercises, specifically the foot, and then doing a lot of strengthening exercise for the calf muscles. Mm. We do manual therapy, so I would also be doing and teaching how to do that using a lacrosse ball on the bottom of the foot.
Okay.
Or a foam roller again. And occasionally, I've been doing less and less stretching, especially sustained stretching. That's why I like the word mobility. So I want to make sure the joints move well, and I want to make sure the tissue moves well. And as long as those things are happening, then I want to strengthen the heck out of things.
You know, it's funny you say you don't go for ice.
Yeah.
My daughter just had, I just was in an ortho place last night.
Yeah.
For fear of an ankle fracture.
Yeah.
Well, the x-ray, you know, it's always too much drama. And it was a sprain of some kind.
Yeah.
Anyway, the doctor said, okay.
Yeah.
Put that sucker in a bucket of ice.
Yeah.
So, was he wrong?
No, there's especially an acute injury, there's a period of time where you can reduce or minimize, I should say, not reduce, but you can minimize how much swelling takes place there. I actually prefer compression because you can do compression all day long. Ice is going to be a short duration, especially a bucket of ice. The issue I also have with ice is a lot of people use a cold pack, and a cold pack is not 32 degrees. And so some of the using of ice is because of the temperature. So if you use a 40 degree ice pack, it may feel good, but it's not actually cooling things down enough to have a substantial effect.
All right. So this one is from Robert in Bearsville. Similar question. I've had plantar fasciitis for 2 years. I'm unable to run. Massage therapist says muscles in feet and calves are tight. Mm-hmm. What can I do?
Well, I got to go back in time a second because I mentioned something about an orthotic, and there are times where something, some type of support in the foot is good to get you over a hump and then to wean yourself back out of it.
Right.
Similar to how we use a cast on a broken arm. You want to do it to stabilize things, let things heal, and then you get out of it and you start moving again. I would do the same things I mentioned before, that the tightness in the muscles usually come from a couple different reasons. One is a thing we call protective tension. So if you're having an injury or the joints aren't working properly, your muscles tense up. Mm-hmm. And the other is weakness. And so it's a fake or pretend type of strength in the foot. Your body's essentially trying to hold everything together and it tenses up. It is not reliable and it does not work really well. So you want to do actual strengthening for the foot and for the calf muscles.
All right. This one is the last email and then we'll jump back on the phones. This one is from Wayne in Stone Ridge. I'm a 52-year-old male. I play soccer twice a week. I try hard to warm up with light running, dynamic stretching, and static stretching. Mm. I recently pulled my hamstring. It's been 3 weeks, and I feel pretty good. How can I be sure that I'm completely healed and ready to start playing again?
In 3 weeks, you're not completely healed. Okay. So it would take a minimum of 4 to 6 weeks to—
For a strain.
Yeah.
Not a tear.
Again, that goes into that grading of it. So the fact that it took that much time for it to start to feel better means it's more than like a grade one, which would only take a couple days.
Okay.
The static stretching before, I would stop from this point forward. Static stretching actually makes the tendons a little bit more susceptible, especially before activity. Mm-hmm. So warming up is good. But how you would identify that is making sure you had full range of motion in the hamstring. And you can test this by lying on your back, taking the leg that's injured, bringing the knee towards your chest so that you're hugging it, and then trying to straighten the leg out, and then going to the other leg and doing the same thing and seeing how they feel relative to one another. And then the other one is to do light activity where you're starting to pick up the speed. If you feel any tightness, that would be an indication to stop. That's where people take a strain or a sprain and they make it into a tear or a rupture.
And we see that in professional sports, on college sports all the time. Yep. Now back to the phones. Barbara in Nassau. Barbara.
Yes.
Hello, you're on.
I have foot pain in the big great toe. I have seen a podiatrist, and she recommended custom orthotics as well as anti-inflammatories, which I have used, and they help a little, but it's still progressing. She suggested sturdy shoes, not flip-flops. I don't ever wear heels, but talked about the possibility of surgery. I don't want to go to surgery, but is this something physical therapy could help with?
Well, I have a couple questions first before I answer that. Do you have any symptoms other than in the foot? Any symptoms in the leg, thigh, back, butt, anything like that?
I have some generalized arthritis. It happened after a lot of walking as an acute pain onset. I went to her thinking maybe I even had gout.
Uh-huh.
She said by x-rays it was, you know, there was arthritis. I have a little neuroma there, but it was more, I think, the hallux rigidus thing.
Okay. So the reason why I say that, and I say it only because of my experiences, but I've treated people who had big toe pain that was actually coming from their back. And so that's the L5 nerve root. That's why I wondered if you had anything else. So as far as the big toe, there's a few things that physical therapy can do. And the number one most important thing would be to mobilize that joint. And there's some technique involved with it, but it is something you could eventually do on your own. And so when I opened my practice in Saratoga, a podiatrist kept me in business. So I've seen lots and lots of people with foot problems and specifically big toe problems.
Yeah.
And I do joint mobilizations and you work on the range of motion of the toe so that it can take the forces going over top of it. And I would be working on the strength of the muscles of the foot. Now, the big toe has a lot of neat attributes to it, and it takes the load from the foot. So one of the big mistakes people make with their choice of shoes is they wear shoes that are too snug, and that crunches your toes together, and it distributes the forces differently in the foot. So I'd make sure you had room in your shoe. And then there's a muscle that goes on the outside of the lower leg. It crosses underneath your foot and attaches to the big toe. It's called the peroneal longus, and that muscle needs to be addressed, and that comes through exercise, occasionally through manual type of therapies, but specific exercises for the muscle that go into the feet and specifically for the muscles of the foot. So you have muscles in your calf that go down and supply the foot, and then you have muscles in the foot itself. They all need to be addressed. And the number one thing at the big toe would be to make sure you have range of motion in it, and that comes from doing mobilizations, which is what you can do in therapy.
I definitely, you know, I can splay the toes on the one foot that doesn't give me pain, just like you can splay your fingers, and the right side, I have very limited more
and that, swollen. That's something that's safe for you to practice right now, and there's another one called yoga toe, which you have your foot on the ground, and you try to lift just your big toe off the ground, and then you put the big toe down and try to lift the little toes off the ground, and doing those are safe to do, and you can play around with trying to get the muscles to wake back up. But I do think it would be beneficial to have someone just move your joint around a little bit.
All right, Barbara, thanks so much for the call. Mary in Woodstock. Mary, you're on.
Hi. I'm having real trouble getting up from a chair. It feels like both the hips don't want to lift very much, even hard with the curb on the street if it's very high.
Yeah.
Now, normally I had no problem, and I used to run up the stairs.
Yeah.
And I tried using different cushions.
Yeah.
But they get higher and higher. So I'm looking for an exercise in the hip joints that might help me get up from a chair.
So the first exercise would actually be to practice getting up and down from the chair in repetition. So starting off with up and down, and on the way down, really work on trying to control yourself down. Don't just plop into the chair. And it's okay to have a little booster when you first start out. Just build up the repetition. And then the next exercise, I would have somebody hold on to a countertop, for example, something that's really stable, or the wall, and just work on lifting the knee up and down like you're going to march in place. But you would try to lift your knee up as high as you could, and then set it down, and then lift the other one up as high as you could. And the key with that is to be deliberate in the movement. Make sure that you're lifting as high as you can and then lowering it down with control. Don't let gravity do it.
All right, Mary, thank you very much for the call. Over to Doug in Thompsonville. Doug.
Gentlemen, thank you. I fell backwards, slipped on ice, and landed directly on my right elbow. Had an MRI done and tore the rotator cuff.
Mm-hmm.
This was a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
I work hard. I didn't baby it.
Mm-hmm.
I, when it first happened, could not lay on it. I'm a side sleeper.
Yeah.
But now it's gotten quite a lot better.
Good.
Except I only get 2 or 3 hours sleep, and then I have to get up for an hour or so. Then I can go back to bed and get back to sleep.
Yeah.
Is there anything I can do maybe in the evening to help me get through that that night?
There's a couple things to try. One thing is just positionally in the bed. Instead of laying directly on the shoulder, try to bring your shoulder slightly forward so you're still kind of on the side but not directly on the shoulder. And you can even prop with some pillows behind you. So you're, I call it a diagonal position, so you're not straight on it. And then it would be beneficial to have some work done. So it could come in the form of a massage therapist working on the muscles of the upper back area and the shoulder area, could in physical therapy, of course, as well. And then in physical therapy, we would show you specific exercises for those muscles. And that's a pretty common condition, and it's one of the signs that the tendon is still not feeling great. And there are things you can do for that to help it get better, for sure.
All right, Doug, thanks a lot. Over to Brad in beautiful Mount Kisco. Brad, you're on. Or maybe he's not there.
Oh, hello?
Oh, hello. You're on.
Yes. I hurt my knee about 6 weeks ago. I was tilling, and there was a snap in my knee.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't hurt at the time, and I continued tilling. But later that night, and the next day, I found that I couldn't climb stairs or go downstairs. And then I went to a doctor, and he said I probably tore my meniscus.
Okay.
And he also told me that I'm bow-legged. And so what I want to know is I cannot now straighten my knee all the way, nor can I bend it all the way without pain.
Okay.
just wondering what are the exercises I should do? What should I try to do to get it to work normally? What can I expect?
So there's a couple things. Number one is if you're physically not able to get it straight, and even if you've tried to get it straight and it still just won't get straight, then there is a good chance that you did tear the meniscus and that's what's blocking your range of motion. However, before you know that for certain, the first thing to do is to try to get that motion back. And the way you would do it is just a basic heel prop, which basically means you put your foot up on a coffee table or another chair, and you literally just let gravity kind of pull it down. Make sure your toes pointing straight towards the sky. Have nothing from about the mid-calf to mid-thigh underneath the leg, so it's completely unsupported at the knee, yeah. And just allow gravity to pull it down. And the bending motion would be to work on bending, and there's a thing we call heel slides, where you grab on the heel and you slide it towards your butt. And it's very important to try to restore your motion, because some of the pain you're having could just because of the motion. And if you restore the motion, then the pain will go away. And another one is swelling. And swelling will often linger in the joint and it will impede your ability to move. And my solution for that is compression that you can wear all day long, just a basic knee sleeve, and then elevation for 20 minutes at a time, at least twice a day, specifically at the end of the day.
All right, Brad, thank you very much. Now quickly over to the other side of the state, Isaac in Syracuse.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Good. After a compound fracture in my leg, but I have crow's feet where your toes point down. Lifting my heel off the ground, my toes go straight. Is there any chance that my tendons are too far gone from the injury?
How long ago was the injury?
8 years.
Oh.
Was that bad?
That's a long time.
Okay.
So soft tissue does remodel, and so it'd be more a product of the joint, a compound fracture. If you have a loss of joint motion, then the tendons cannot restore all the way back because the joint is going to impede that. And 8 years is a long time to come back from.
Right.
I'm a very optimistic guy, so I think that it's worth trying. But I would try to let the patient know that the odds aren't in favor of that return. It's a pretty...
My knee works good. I just can't separate my toes.
Yeah. Specifically working on the exercises that would incorporate that, just like one I described, yoga toe,
yeah.
Working on the muscles of the foot and trying to work on the balance, just standing on one foot, things like that. So,
all right. We only have about 30 seconds here. This email came in, and I think this is a great one. What should I do to recover from a calf cramp?
Calf cramp.
15 seconds.
So there's lots that can cause calf cramps, but to recover from it is tricky, and I try to go with the cramping, which isn't easy to do, but it tends to make it go away faster. You
what
can
do you
also
go with the cramping?
So the muscle is pulling down, and instead of trying to stretch away from it, you go with the muscle and tense
it.
Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. And I only did that anecdotally because that's what I did, and it seemed to go away faster when I tried to stretch.
Yeah, this guy was biking, I think, when it happened.
Oh, yeah. So. Oh. Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. It can be coming from the back. It can be he's dehydrated. It can be a whole bunch of slew of things. His pedals may be off. His seat may be off. So you'd have to check all those things.
All right, very good. Well, that is where we will have to leave it today. Thank you very much for being here. Support comes from Paul Smith's College, the College of the Adirondacks, offering degrees in management, natural sciences, hospitality, forestry, psychology, and more. Paul Smith's College, it's about the experience. paulsmiths.edu. Tanglewood Popular Artist Series, presenting Reba McEntire on September 1st. Tanglewood.org for tickets. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years. QFCC.com. And Adirondack Experience, the museum on Blue Mountain Lake, exploring people's connection to the Adirondacks through indoor and outdoor exhibits, activities, and events. ADKX.org for details. Well, that's it. Thanks again to Matthew Goodemote for being with us today. Thank you for calling. Terrific call. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. We'll do it again soon. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Kayleen White. Our producer, the absent Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, this is exciting. So we started the week with gastroenterology, and then we had sports cards. Today we had physical therapy. Tomorrow, the scientists return. We do a science forum right now. Stand by for 51%.